Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
I'll kick off the climate crazy for this morning to sort of sum up what Salima said. So the Kapiti District Council's own paperwork says, their own report says that there's thousands of properties impacted and they need to have put in place adaptation measures that could cost up to $1 billion. Meanwhile, the new DeLonghi report commissioned by CREW says there is barely 50 properties and it is pretty much business as usual for most other than those 50 who might have to do something. And then again, it would vary on the time horizon. So from the disastrous impact that the Kapiti Council, District Council seems to think, to what the DeLonghi report saying all is well. Quite the contrast there. And that is, I'd say, the peak climate crazy for New Zealand this week.
Yeah, so look, there's a message in that for many other councils around New Zealand that are managing coastal areas. So let's hope this stuff can get out widely and quickly.
We're a coastal country, Don, up and down, long, narrow islands. It's going to have an impact on everyone.
Well, and you know, they've used these implausible scenarios to do their modeling, these outfits. And of course, we know climate variation's alive and well, and little things called earthquake can have quite a significant effect on whether there's a coastal uprising or dropping away. There's a whole lot of things in play, and stuff can change in an instant. And here we are trying to model for 100 freaking years.
Not one person down modeled the underground undersea volcano. You know, a couple of years ago, was it now? Or was it longer? I almost forget. Where does all of that sort of natural variation come into the reckoning?
Yeah, well, and I know we're now confusing the whole thing, perhaps, because it's the clarity that the DeLonghi report gave the CREW and the Kapiti residents is stunning. So let's hope that the Kapiti Council takes heed.
Absolutely.
But you've always come up with lots of stuff in the climate crazy spots, Jaspreet, and there's a whole bunch to choose from. What was your top pick?
Well, the experience I underwent with Al Gore's climate reality program to become trained as a climate reality leader, I'd say that would be my peak insanity. I didn't hear a word of science in those 3 days of workshops. All it was done pure propaganda. This earthquake hit, this storm hit, and this hurricane hit, and this is due to anthropogenic climate change, and this is due to fossil fuels were the big baddie in that 3-day conference. Mm-hmm. And all the young people who I saw, and I could sort of make out that they're younger than me because they write differently than me at 45, and the language differs, I think, from me and a 25-year-old. Gosh, they were enthralled. You could just see them hanging on to every word.
Yeah, great foot soldiers in the end, you might say, for the core that Al Gore has put together. I mean, 3.5 million of them.
They've been told
bigger than any army you know of, pretty much.
Been told to go forth and multiply.
Yeah, well,
spread the word, spread the gospel.
And of course, now we've got issues about translating. Stuff, you know, how language barriers influence global and climate literacy. Isn't there such a thing as translations? And, you know, multiple, I'm sure that if I wanted to read something of vital importance that was in French or Latin or Spanish, I'd just put the translate button on.
Well, so you're referring to the headline on theconversation.com that stated how language barriers influence global climate literacy. And that article goes on to say that it's two Anglophone countries, the US and UK, that's giving out research outputs. And places like India, Nigeria, Malaysia, where English is the bastion of the elite. I somehow don't know how I got it. I'm certainly not one of the elite. They can't get it. So The article goes on to say, so what do we do? How do we help others understand? They have a solution, of course, and their solution is the UNESCO Open Science Initiative that you can find at the UNESCO.org, the website. So there will be a single source of science, open science, that will be translating this into all languages. It's the United Nations at work, making sure we all sing from the same song sheet.
Yeah, well, they basically, this article talks about how those of us that speak English and in this paradigm of climate change only amount to be sees 400 million. I think that's a bit more than that. But anyway, that's a very small percentage of the world's population. Though, so that might just tell a wee story about where this climate stuff is really hitting home. And why is it hitting home into these more affluent Western countries? Just seems a bit weird, does it, to you, Jaspreet? just putting it out there.
Yes, sir. It sure does.
Anyway, but that's written by the New Zealand conversation, isn't it? It's not the Australian one, so it's right in our back door.
Yeah, and another initiative to make sure that people from less elite countries like India can get their dosage is by the consultant KPMG. So LiveMint, that's an Indian website, reports that KPMG to propose educational curriculum for climate awareness at COP29. So this is, listeners, currently right now, it's summit season. The biodiversity COP, COP16, has just ended a couple of days ago at Cali in Colombia. And on the 11th of November, Baku, Azerbaijan, there'll be the COP29, which is the climate change COP. Yep. So that is where KPMG states it will be proposing that there be an awareness program. And what they want to see, ideally, is, he says, who is he? It's Mike Hayes in New Delhi for KPMG, saying, we are saying that we want climate to become a foundational education subject for 4 to 12-year-olds at a minimum. And this is 4 to, because in India, you start school anytime after the age of 3. So 4 to 12-year-old in India must get their dose of the climate science, and KPMG will make sure of that.
Yep. And they say, so at the moment, sustainability and climate is one of those fringe subjects, unlike maths and your local language. So we want to bring it into the mainstream for two reasons, he said. One is that the reason, which is very much going around getting us ready to build what we call the skill set for the future. Sorry, that was I made a hash of that. The second thing is not just about upskilling, it's about informing people. I mean, they don't realize the anxiety that they're creating. You know, if they're not going to inform people with facts, if they're going to create all this emotional stuff, you know, do they want everyone on antidepressants from a young age? I mean, it just drives me nuts, this stuff.
And is there not a conflict of interest? The article goes on to say that KPMG has been working in the energy transition space with both private and the government sector. And another person quoted here is the global co-lead of climate change and decarbonization. Yeah, there is a serious conflict of interest the way my lay person's brain sees this. But we shall see what comes out at Baku once COP29 is underway. Soon, in another a week.
Well, we've often talked about it. All the big consultancy firms are donkey deep in this stuff. They can't help themselves. And it's at the moment, the checks just keep being written for them. So I don't know. It's up to us to one day put a line in the sand and say, actually, had enough. Because we're now just on top of all of this, and adjunct to it really, is the cost of this is now being talked about, the net zero stuff around the world. And I know this is different to the education stuff, but we're now talking, someone came up with 70 trillion the other day, and it still probably won't be enough. But no one has talked about the cost versus the benefit. And no one can tell you that spending that 70 trillion is going to move the dial. In fact, temperature-wise. In fact, what I saw the other day is, even if we do all this, there'll be a lag effect before it comes to reality.
I saw that a couple of centuries even for the earth to cool down. So by then, all of us who paid this will be well and truly dead and gone and buried.
I'm sick of these bludges. They are just bludges off genuine taxpayers. The wastage that's going into all of this is obscene. I know that I will be chastised for saying that in some circles, but actually, let us just get on with doing the right thing.
So 14th November, the deliberations will begin in Baku on finance, investment and trade, which will launch the Climate Finance Action Fund. And let's see how much, what's our invoice, New Zealand? How much are we told to cough up?
Yeah, well, it's it will be significant. And of course, today, in fact, perhaps it was late last week, we have to have our nationally, does it declared contributions? What's mm-hmm. that word? NDC number NDC. 2 had to be formulated and in the hands of Parliament by late last week. And so we've got, by the end of this month, we'll know. And that all sort of comes out about the same time. The methane science review panel is going to report back. So heck, let's hope we have a massive change on our inventory. If you want to buy into this, let's hope our inventory gets massively reduced and our contribution can be reduced.
I sat through the MFAT, Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade, briefing, pre-COP29 briefing that they held over the last weekend, Don. And what the gentleman who was holding court seemed to suggest to the 90-odd participants, I think I noticed on the Zoom, was the science is well settled. All we need to do is this time go out there and figure out what's going to be our share, how much will we be paying. That's pretty much all there was to it in that briefing. The briefing ended in about 17 minutes, and then it was about the people, you know, the overflow bludges and who else needs excess passes and all of this. So I was sitting there and watching and thinking, do you realize the misery, the country, economic misery is currently in and where this is going to lead? But not very blithely, he was parroting on. Yeah.
Well, you know, and to change subjects again, because I'm good at that tonight today, we're going to bankrupt ourselves, aren't we? We're already, according to the Taxpayers Union, each family in New Zealand has government debt against it of $90,000.
Don't.
And yet we're still playing this damn virtuous climate change game. I don't know when some common sense can come back into the executive.
When hardship really, really, really hammers home hard enough.
And that's why they've never put the dollar value of all this inside your home yet. No one will ever put a dollar on it, a value on your electricity bill, your energy bill, the cost of living. It's all in a big pool. They will never define what net zero is going to cost you.
And
but it is massive.
The cost that COP is going to with the Climate Action Fund, there's also going to be figures coming out of the COP16, which is the biodiversity COP, which has just ended. Initially, the plan was that the rich countries are going to be mobilizing $20 billion US annually by 2025, when we agreed to this a few years ago. However, to date, the countries have only coughed about $400 million, so a far cry from $20 billion. And that $20 billion from 2025 to 2030 increases to $30 billion. Per year. I can just see Antonio Guterres just going absolutely berserk. Hey, the checkbook's not adding up. Somebody cough up more.
Yep. And so, and on top of all of that, you see the likes of BP is walking back on its green targets. They've realized that the market reality is a bit, it's quite hard to compete against. So they've reversed its commitment to cut oil and gas production by 40% by 2030. Thanks, BP. We needed to know that.
That sounds like Air New Zealand. When they've walked back on the targets, it doesn't matter. But there's other loyal foot soldiers coming, not the least of which will be 10,000. 10,000 doctors.
Yeah.
So the Sustainable Markets Initiative, which incidentally was the brainchild of King Charles, the press release from them stated, this is around middle of October, stated that 25 leading universities, European universities, have launched a training program for 10,000 future doctors medical students currently so that they can learn more about the climate impacts on health and sustainable healthcare. This is chaired by the University of Glasgow and supported by the World Health Organization, because they say climate change and human health is just completely one and the same thing, completely linked. You can't differentiate between them. So your doctors in the future might be writing prescriptions of what, Don, exactly? With that prescription?
Antidepressants mainly. Sorry.
Talk about a reality check. Yep, exactly. Yes.
But yeah, look, they're finding something in here, aren't they? They're finding a reason to be, basically. Well, wouldn't you just want to be a doctor? Just get on with doing what you're supposed to do?
Well, seeing that, you know, there's barely any healthcare systems left in most of the Western countries, as I see, to speak of, yeah, how much worse can we get, Don? Let's just be realistic here.
How much what? Sorry, I missed that.
How much worse can we truly get? How much worse can a medical system truly get? It's already on its knees.
Well, it's weird because you speak to people in Australia and they don't seem to be having the problems we have here. So what is it? We always are told that we're underfunding mm-hmm. health. Everything's mm-hmm. underfunded. Well, there's something not right, because clearly putting more money at it hasn't really fixed it. So is there a lot of waste in our system? That's what seems to be the undertone that I'm getting. There's so much middle management and waste rather than coalface, you know, healthcare.
I'm looking at some of the leading lights of the world who are speaking or who are quoted in the press release with this 10,000 doctors who are going to be trained in climate science. You, of course, have the usual suspects, such as your Tedros, World Health Organization, and others. But other names are some of these vaccine manufacturers, AstraZeneca, Roche, Sanofi, and others. In fact, I was reading this one. Yeah, Pascal Soriot, CEO of AstraZeneca, who is the chair of the Sustainable Market Initiative, says the climate emergency is the biggest health emergency of our time, and healthcare professionals are on the front lines of dealing with the increasing health impacts of climate change. This trailblazing network will help ensure that the next generation of doctors are equipped to respond to changing population health needs and provide more sustainable healthcare to their patients. He should have a look at their track record. When AstraZeneca was pulled, their COVID vaccine was pulled from the market, the safe and effective one, there were quite a few who by that time had realized it wasn't quite safe and effective. So do you want to trust them on the climate science? I won't.
Well, I just want them to be trustworthy as medical practitioners. They don't need to be worried about climate change specifically. I mean, at GSK, GlaxoSmithKline, CE said that science is clear. Climate change has a direct impact on human health. Well, yeah, well, the climate does have a direct impact on human health. We don't want it to be cold, that's for sure, because we don't like freezing. We don't like it to be too hot, perhaps, but actually, we know we'd rather be warm than cold. I just, this whole thing here, Jaspreet, we've got the CEO of Novartis. Human health and planetary health are inextricably linked.
But
it just goes on and on.
These are the same people, the same similar headline that got my attention last week. Miscarriages due to climate crisis is a blind spot in the climate action plan, with potential collapse of the Amazon rainforest, the vital Atlantic Ocean currents, essential infrastructure in cities in danger. Scientists, 80 scientists, 45 countries say that we are missing this blind spot in climate action plans, that miscarriages are being caused due to climate change. Like, I am over this now, honestly.
So let's get on to the next part of our show, because, boy, this just winds us up, winds me up anyway. I know you're laughing, but you know, if we don't laugh, you would get quite despondent about this stuff.
Yeah, I would weep if I wouldn't laugh at this stuff, but it is that ridiculous when I see miscarriage and climate change written. And one, this is miscarriages for any person who's been through them. It's rough, but this is sort of the gaslighting at a level I never imagined I would see in print in the media, but here we are.
Yep. It's easy to write. It's funny how the action just isn't quite hitting the ground. So, and it never will. Who have we got next? We've got the trio of Fed Farmers presidents. We had them on a year ago, and we've got them back for the one-year report card for the coalition government. So that's Owen Jennings, Katie Millman, Charlie Pedersen, and us up after the break.
Don is being rather modest here. He's the fourth one, so there's actually four presidents, Feds, and I'll be zipping up in this one. Four ex-Feds president of the House. I'll just be sitting and taking notes. That's after this break, 2057, if you want to message us or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.